That song is from The Con, the fifth release from 26-year-old identical twins Tegan and Sarah. It's an album the Quinn Gals produced with the help of Christopher Walla from the band Death Cab for Cutie. They've been touring relentlessly. Almost all the U.S. dates are sold out through early December, and then Tegan and Sarah head to Australia and Europe well into 2008. So we were lucky that they stopped by our studios this week with three guitars, a glockenspiel, and their friend Ted. They played and told us about everything from their reluctance to sign a record deal to the beauty of their homeland, Canada. So wait, you guys are from Calgary, right?
Originally, yes.
How much of your growing up years did you spend there?
We 19. Moved away, yeah, when we were 19.
Mm-hmm. I've been to Calgary. It's beautiful, but it's kind of in the middle of Canada.
No, yeah.
I was going to say nowhere, but I didn't want to offend you.
No, I mean, like, basically the closest bigger city is Edmonton, which is a little bit smaller than Calgary, and then Vancouver, which is, you know, probably the biggest city on the West Coast. So it is kind of in the middle of nowhere.
But it's in the beautiful part of nowhere, because to your east you have all the prairies, and it's beautiful, and then about 40 minutes to the west is the Rocky Mountains. So it's beautiful. It's a beautiful place to grow up. It's in a strange way, it's quite isolated, but if you're looking for that type of isolation, it's the best type.
So Sarah, what kind of live music did you get to see if you were living in Calgary?
The popular thing when we were growing up in the 90s, you know, like there was a huge punk community in Calgary. Like a lot of kids, I guess for whatever reason, were drawn to that. And we also were getting a lot of what was coming south of the border from the Pacific Northwest. So we had a lot of, like, you know, like pretty heavy rock and, mm-hmm. you know, like everything that was coming out of that scene at the time, like Nirvana, but then also kind of like the Riot Girl stuff. So that was huge. And then hip hop was huge. We had a lot of, like where we grew up in the inner city or whatever, for whatever reason, there was a lot of hip hop. So I grew up listening to like punk and hip hop.
Tegan, do you remember the first live act you saw that made you think, okay, I'm going to do this one day?
Well, we Sarah and I were lucky because our parents were really young when they had us, and so they were really still into music, you know, very much like up on current stuff. And so, I mean, seeing Bruce Springsteen and U2 was really amazing. We did, you know, saw a lot of concerts before we were 15. But I think it was when we were 15 and we started going to shows on our own, like without our parents, and seeing a lot of local bands play, that I actually started to feel motivated to play music for other people. But I didn't ever have the urge to play at the halls where we were seeing music. I mean, we played in our friends' garages and we'd have parties, but it wasn't until we were 17 and, you know, we entered this contest and it was for free studio time that we actually played in a licensed venue for strangers. And even after we did that, I didn't lay in bed at night and think, I can't wait to get up on stage again. Like, it really was very much a solitary thing that I really like to do just for the sake of doing it.
So, Sarah, you enter this contest, which Tegan just mentioned. Mm-hmm. You get this free studio time. You make mm-hmm. this demo. Mm-hmm. Is that the demo that you ended up sending to the record companies?
No.
Okay.
We had this demo, and we used to, like, again, like, we weren't really thinking. It's so funny now because our audience has gotten a lot younger, so we're, like, talking to a lot of, like, 17, 18-year-old kids sometimes, and I'm like, back in the olden days when we didn't have the internet, it's like, I don't think that we really knew what you did when you had a demo. Like, we knew that you could get gigs from a demo, because then you could send your demo tape to a promoter at a club or whatever and be like, oh, we're good, like, let us play. But we ended up making a couple of demo tapes, selling them for a couple bucks, you know, at shows, that sort of thing. And we didn't really want to do a record deal.
Really? You didn't want to?
I don't know. I think we were like, well, I know for me more than Tegan, I still thought to myself, I'm going to go to university. I'm going to take a year off. I'm going to do these things that I'd sort of been telling everybody that I was going to do. Not having a record deal hadn't stopped us from making records, as far as I was concerned. We had demo tapes. We had a record. We toured. I wasn't totally sure what a record company was going to do for us. I hated authority. I hated having responsibility put on me, and I was totally scared. At 18, 19 years old, I was scared that having a record deal meant having a job. I was scared about that.
Well, it worked out because you're on your fifth record.
Yeah.
Can you play the title track from your new record,
Absolutely.
The Con?
We sure can. All right.
I listened in. Yes, I'm guilty of this. You should know this. I broke down and wrote you back before you had a chance to forget, forgotten. I am moving past this, giving notice. I have to go. Yes, I know that feeling. Know you're leaving. I'm calling you to say, okay. nobody likes to, but I really like to cry. Nobody likes me, maybe if I cry. Spout out your name and list the reasons. Fade apart, don't call me back. I imagine you and I was distant, not insistent. I followed soon and laid out on my back. Imagine that. A million hours left to think of you and think of that. Calm down, I'm calling you to say. I'm capsized, staring on the edge of shame. Now calm down, I'm calling back to say. Nobody likes to, but I really like to cry. Nobody likes me, maybe if I cry. Insert can be, I need to be.
And Sarah, that's called The Con from their fifth album. Now, when you listen to you guys sing, like many siblings, there's a certain sort of quality that's similar in your voice. And I think because you're identical twins, people want to say, oh, they sound so much alike, but you really have a different tone in your voice. Tegan, can you describe Sarah's voice?
I mean, I think that, like, it's probably really difficult for me to pinpoint. Like, I know our voices don't sound the same. If you pay attention, like, within, like, 2 seconds, you can tell the difference between us, and there are some very distinct differences in how we look and how we sound, but also how we write songs. So when I hear Sarah's voice, it sounds like someone else's voice. I don't hear her voice and think, geez, that sounds like me. Now, flip of the coin is that sometimes I will leave myself voicemail messages, and I will think it's Sarah, and I'll be like, why is Sarah telling me to go to the bank and get, like, you know, so sometimes I can't tell the difference between us, and I'll be like, what the hell is she going on about?
I think we're good at mimicking, too. Like, it's like, I'll, like, the way that I sing a song of Tegan's will be, like, not how I sing a song of my own.
I want you to do some internet fact-checking for me. So Wikipedia busting.
Okay,
let's
do it.
Okay?
Let's do it.
According to Wikipedia, and, you know, if it's on the internet, it must be true. During their 2007 tour, they, meaning you guys, have also introduced the anti-encore. They will ask the crowd to stay completely silent during their final exit, to not scream and shout like most traditional encores. Once the venue is in complete silence, they will make their entrance wear in complete harmony. The crowd will welcome them with cheers and screams. True or false?
We have done that quite a few times, actually.
In Canada, we did that.
I don't know, we tried it out. I don't like the encore. I mean, I don't, like, personally think it's necessary. Like, you know, like, to me, if you come out and you play, like, a full great set, you know, I understand the, like, instinct to want to call back the artist. But unfortunately, people know the encore is happening, so they don't have to try that hard. And so as an artist, you'll stand at the side of the stage and you will question your purpose in life. because you'll be like, they're not even clapping that loud. I mean, did we do a bad job? I mean, they seemed into it. Why? I mean, we shouldn't even go out there. I mean, like, I don't even want to go out there. And then Sarah will be like, get out there. And then you step on stage and they explode.
So we came up with this. Well, I came up with this idea one night right before the encore because I was feeling self-conscious. And I was like, hey, everyone in the audience, we have to do this together. When we finish this last song, be silent. Don't make a noise. And so we literally finished with this huge song of ours. And we stopped and there was a few rant, but then people were like, shh. And it was like silent.
It was weird.
It was so weird. And we like put our instruments down and we walked off stage and we went around the curtain to the other side and we stood there and then we walked out on stage and the place exploded. And I was like, see, now this is what an encore feels like. Like they were anticipating us coming back. And instead of just being like, ooh,
golf
should we
class,
get our jackets?
Right?
And how many songs do you think they're going to play? Like, should we, I mean, maybe we should get in line for t-shirts now, you know? Like, it's just, it feels so lackluster. And it's not the audience's fault. We're just, we've been given too much. We don't, we're consumer
we're
nation.
We're a society with a pony.
What the?
We've already got the pony. We have what? Nothing else to look
forward
to.
You keep bringing up this pony thing. I don't even want a pony. I don't know if Sarah keeps thinks the ultimate
apparently
is a
Sarah
pony.
Apparently Sarah wants a pony.
It's a metaphor, you know.
Somebody out there, just take note.
You know, when kids in the 80s on television, like, they'd be like, what do you want? And they'd be like, I want a pony. Where's the pony going to live? I don't even know. I don't know where my pony would live. Okay. I feel like my condo board would be really upset if I showed up with a pony after this tour.
Tegan and Sarah are in studio. The name of their fifth album is called The Con. The song Back in Your Head is a good case of the producer really helping your song take shape, right? Mm-hmm. Tell us a little bit, Sarah, how different the song was when you first recorded and then what Chris Walla from Death Cab for Cutie did for the song.
You know, when the original song, like the demo version of it, is quite slow, and that's really the biggest change. Like, when I sent the song out to Chris, he was like, oh, this is really different than anything else you've written for the album, and I really love it. And I thought it was, like, such a sad song. Like, it was really sad, and there was something very slow about it, and I didn't know if it was a sleeper or if it was, like, going to make the album or what. And then over Christmas, Chris texted me, and he was like, I think we should speed it up really fast and make it kind of like a pop song. Like, it'll be a pop song, and playing it that fast was, like, really disorienting for me because I was like, what is this? I don't understand this song. I'm a chipmunk now. I don't get it. But the song itself, like the arrangement, the lyrics, the melody, all that sort of stuff, that really stayed the same. It was just, it's amazing what speeding a song up can do. Like, it literally went from sort of being a sweet pop song to being like a pop song. And it's become like this funny song that like I really love and care about, but I still think of it as sort of being this like very sad, sweet, like just a guitar and a vocal song.
All right, well, we'll keep all that in mind.
Okay, yeah.
While Tegan and Sarah play Back in Your Head.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Performance from Tegan and Sarah from earlier this week. You can see one of their performances on our website, npr.org/Bryant Park.
That's the encore they don't want you to hear.